Welcome to this week's bonus episode of Blood Podcast, your source for innovative ideas and cutting-edge information. In this episode, Associate Editor Dr. Frieda Stevenson and her authors Dr. Andrea Radke, Dr. Karen Tart, and Dr. Leandro Cerchetti discuss the influence of the tumor microenvironment on the pathogenesis of B-cell lymphomas.
I'm Frieda Stevenson. I'm an AE at Blood, and I'm a professor of immunology at the University of Southampton in the UK. The theme of this series is the influence of the tumor microenvironment on the pathogenesis of human B-cell lymphoma. I think over the past few years, there's been an intense focus on genomic changes that occur in lymphoma cells. And that has revealed the importance of certain pathways operating. And that's indicated by follicular lymphoma, by the relatively frequent mutations in epigenetic modifiers, for example. However, it's clear that each category of lymphoma is heterogeneous, and attention is now turned to the other side of the coin, which is the role of the surrounding microenvironment. So the goal of the series was to describe to the community of Blood how our knowledge of this area is increasing, and how new technologies can be used to probe the complexity of the interaction between lymphoma cells and the microenvironment. Understanding the interactions is already revealing vulnerabilities of tumor cells, which can be specifically targeted for therapy. In the series, we've drawn together experts on different aspects of the lymphoma microenvironment, including the cellular composition of the stroma and of the immune cells, that is Karen Tart, the spatial distribution of these cells, Andrea Radke, the role of a single universal change in the B-cell receptor of follicular lymphoma, which allows interaction with a local lectin, Frieda Stevenson, and finally, the genetic changes operating in the microenvironment itself, Leandro Cerchetti. What is perhaps unusual for a series, and which I'm rather pleased about, is the cross-referencing of each review to the others. So that links together the different findings and creates an overall picture. The first article by Andrea Radke is the follicular lymphoma tumor environment at single cell and spatial resolution. And here the authors describe the range of technologies for deconstructing the microenvironment at the single cell level and with spatial resolution, which can be applied to tissue sections at the proteomic or transcriptomic levels to investigate the cellular composition and the architecture of normal and malignant human lymph nodes. Time points of disease are critical for understanding tumor evolution and response to therapy, and information will inform clinical decisions. The second article by Karen Tart's lab with Laurent and Dietrich is entitled Cell Crosstalk with Lymphoma Tumor Environment, We're Using Follicular Lymphoma as a Paradigm. And over several years, Karen's group has analyzed the cell components of lymph node, bone marrow, in normal lymphomatous tissues. They have compiled an inventory of tumor, stromal, and immune components where heterogeneity and complexity are the rule. The group also aims to connect phenotype with function and with the changing features of the tumor microenvironmental interactions as disease progresses. To do this, it was necessary to monitor surface phenotype and intracellular activation. The review in the series is one written by me, which is the essential microenvironmental role of oligomannoses specifically inserted into the antigen binding sites of lymphoma cells. This review conveys a simple message that the B-cell receptors of follicular lymphoma cells acquire N-glycosylation sites into which oligomannoses are inserted. The modification of the B-cell receptor is tumor-specific and appears universal in follicular lymphoma, in a subset of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, likely derived by transformation of follicular lymphoma, and in cases of Burkitt's lymphoma. The presence of these oligomannoses allows interaction with a lectin, DC sign, which is expressed by follicular dendritic cells and macrophages. The B-cell receptor DC sign expressed on follicular dendritic cells allows a low-level continuous signaling in follicular lymphoma cells with upregulation of adhesion to VCAM1. This interaction occurs early and is a sine qua non for follicular lymphoma, offering a vulnerability which can be targeted by anti-DC sign antibodies. The third article is concerned with genetic mechanisms underlying tumor microenvironmental composition and function in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. The change in genetic profile of tumor cells of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma creates a potential influence on the microenvironment. This review, which actually is the fourth review, considers the heterogeneous nature of the TMA, the tumor microenvironment, in the categories of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma at different stages of disease. The possibility of a switch from an early tumor suppressive mode to a tumor promoting function is explored. Now, the four articles cover the currently known features of the microenvironment of human lymphoma and add some new data. There's a focus on follicular lymphoma, where the microenvironment is relatively preserved. But diffuse large B-cell lymphoma and Burkitt's lymphoma are coming into the picture. The integration of spatial transcriptomics and proteomics with cell features and function illuminate the complex cellular interaction and allow probing for vulnerabilities. Importantly, there is this cross-referencing that I've already mentioned between the reviews, especially concerning the nourishing interaction between the B-cell receptor of follicular lymphoma cells and DC sign, which is universal and therefore a significant target for intervention. So there are many additional questions. The topic of the tumor microenvironment is applied to all hematological tumors and is therefore of central importance for blood. Clinical hematology has benefited from the scientific insight in terms of immunotherapy and drug development. The understanding of the microenvironment is highly likely to add to this by revealing vulnerable points in the tumor lifestyle. In my opinion, the community will benefit from insight into both new technologies for investigating cell behavior and into the new knowledge of the peculiarities and vulnerabilities of lymphoma cells. The striking development is to turn from the concept that the only thing that matters is the genetic profile of tumor cells towards a greater understanding of just what the tumor cells are exploiting and molding in the microenvironment.
I am Karine Tartt, professor in immunology in Rennes University, France. The review I was in charge in is really dedicated to the understanding of the very complex network of cell interaction that takes place inside the niche of the tumor, both the lymph node, but also the bone marrow. And this network is essential to support the survival of the tumor B cells, but also their resistance to treatment and their evolution during the whole disease course. The question of the tumor microenvironment in follicular lymphoma, but also in all lymphoma in general, is very important because it is crucial to understand how the disease develops initially from pretumoral stage toward an overt lymphoma, and then how it will evolve during all the evolution of the disease, response to treatment, how the spatial and dynamic heterogeneity take place, and so how it is important, why it is so important to target this crosstalk in order to obtain what we expect, that is a cure of the patients. Follicular lymphoma is a disease that is incurable until now. It is dominated by response, relapse to treatment. And so we should understand why and how this niche, the niche of the tumor, is able to support the minimal residual disease, the common precursor cells that will trigger the relapse at the end after treatment. If we understand this better, we will be able to target this niche and so to increase the rate, the probability for the patients to be cured for the disease. This is true in follicular lymphoma. This is also true in other hematological malignancies, And this is probably why it's important for the whole community of hematological researchers. The question of the niche of the tumor is crucial not only for basic researchers, but also for clinicians. We need now probably to develop new treatment that not only target tumor B cells, like rituximab and all these antibodies, but also that target the niche and or that use this niche to trigger the response. A lot of people now are aware that we could use the tumor microenvironment as an example with B-specific antibodies or other drugs in order to use this microenvironment, in particular immune cells, to destroy tumor B cells. However, there is another field that is less well known, but that is probably very important, is how to target the supportive niche, the stromal cells, the macrophages and FDC that express DC sign, the IL-4 that is produced by T follicular helper cells. All these signals are important because they support the growth of the tumor. And right now we know that even when we kill the tumor B cells, we have at least part of this niche that is retained and that will probably be the soil for the development of the new tumor and for the relapse. So understanding that will lead to the development probably of new strategies that not only target better the B cells, but that also target the microenvironment and will help to ultimately destroy residual tumor B cells. Starting from the article that we produced for this series of blood, I think it's very important to keep in mind that follicular lymphoma microenvironment is at least made of three main features, if we could recapitulate it rapidly. For sure, everybody knows that in this disease, you are dominated by an immune response that is defective. We have a lot of exhausted T cells. We have a defect of synapse formation between T cells and B cells. This is well known. But there is at least two other features that I think are important to consider. The first one is that in this disease, you have a very active follicular helper T cells compartment, what we are calling TFH, that will both directly activate the B cells, but that will also organize the whole niche. It produces a lot of factors. They overexpress these factors compared to normal TFH. And so they will activate myeloid cells to express DC sign. They will activate stromal cells to produce 6L12. That will lead to production of Treg recruiting chemokines. Finally, there is a third component that is very, very, very important. And that are stromal cells that are found within the tumor. For a long period of time, nobody takes care about stromal cells because we have hematological malignancy. So it is something like a fluid where B cells and T cells are in the middle of nothing. But it's not the case. Stromal cells are everywhere. They are supporting the tumor. They are also supporting the recruitment of immune cells. And depending on their features, it will have a huge impact on B cell growth and immune response inside the tumor. And right now, it's time to better understand these cells, their heterogeneity, their function, how we could target them, and how it will influence drastically the development of new drugs in this disease. So not only exhausted immune cells, immune response, but also active TFH and active stromal cells. Something that is probably very important in terms of disease course is what is the niche, or what are the niches, in fact, we don't know, of the common precursor cells that are the cells that are present very early in the disease, in follicular lymphoma, even before the development of overt follicular lymphoma. We know that a lot of healthy donors have some CPC in their blood. We know that they're inside the lymph node. We know that they're inside the bone marrow, but we don't know really where they are. And these cells will survive all the treatments and will see the relapse.
Can I add to that? I agree with Karin that the early cells are important. And the message, perhaps, or one of the messages that's coming out of that, although it is our work, it is actually also partly Karin's and also partly Andrea's, which is the expression of these oligomannoses that I mentioned, which interact with DC sign, as mentioned again by Karin. This is a very early event. It's universal, therefore it's important for tumor cells, but it's also present on those very early cells Karin was just talking about, which may give rise to overt lymphoma, but may not quite have got there. And if you can, as we have shown, if you can inhibit the interaction with that microenvironmental DC sign, then you will chip the cells off their microenvironment and they will no longer be able to get that nourishing signal and support that they need. So it seems as though there may be, cutting through the massive heterogeneity, which again, Karen and everybody else will refer to, there may be one thing that we can bring out of these reviews together, which is we can inhibit that early reaction by simple monoclonal antibody therapy. So we all need to work together to see if this holds. And what Karen's talked about with the other stromal cells and the T cells all need to be considered. T cells produce IL-4, which upregulate DC sign. The interactions go on, and they are complex. And I think what frightens me a little bit about lymphoma is the heterogeneity. I think everybody who works on the cellular composition of lymphoma talks about heterogeneity between patients, between effects of therapy, over time, etc. But this one phenomenon about the interaction with DC sign gives us a sort of hope that we could make one inhibition and perhaps do all the things that we want to do in early follicular lymphoma. And that will go into trial before too long. But I think everybody agrees. The person I know least is Dr. Cecchietti, but he's also got some interesting observations on the way the tumor cells might influence the microenvironment. I think this is fairly new, but could be interesting. I think we're all talking the same language. And I think we all have the same feeling that by describing these cellular interactions, we get the vulnerabilities. We can focus on the vulnerabilities. And by specific either drug or preferably to me, monoclonal antibody therapy, because that's gentle and specific, we can perhaps affect early disease. We need to pick up early disease. So detection becomes an important thing too. And we have thoughts about how to do that also, but that's for the future. So I think we're all working along the same lines. We all have the same theme. There's no disagreement. And what will come out of everybody's work in this review series is a new way, possibly, of looking at follicular lymphoma, moving slightly away from genomics, keeping it in mind, but now focusing on the immense complexity and the interest of that microenvironmental support.
My name is Dr. Andrea Radke. I have a PhD in immunology, and I'm at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. In the review that we authored with Dr. Mark Ruszewski, who's a clinician who supervised the clinical trials for the follicular lymphoma studies we've done together, we titled our manuscript, "The Follicular Lymphoma Tumor Microenvironment as Single Cell and Spatial Resolution." And in there, we outlined changes to the anatomical structures and cell types in the environment over time. We talked about the technologies that one could use to explore the tumor microenvironment at single and spatial cell resolution. And we also talked about how you would design sample processing to capture the clonal evolution, the need for both tissue and liquid biopsies in cell suspensions at landmark time points, as well as periodically with the need for liquid biopsies for this disseminated disease. This is looking at clinical samples. So I would say that it's immediately relevant as we are looking at excisional biopsies from human samples. And we are talking about technologies that you can apply to the human samples and considerations for employing them. And also we talk about the pathological variants and clinical outcomes. So I would say, you know, it'd be immediately relevant. And then the paper that is, you know, really born out of this review is in Cancer Cell, the multi-omic profiling of the follicular lymphoma microenvironment. That was all done with clinical samples. So I would think that it'd be immediately relevant because it's human patient samples. We're in the real world and they're all enrolled into a prospective clinical trial. The top two or three takeaways that I really want to leave the reader with, first of all, just an excitement for the tumor microenvironment. I think that's the goal and ambition for everybody that authored a an article in the review series. And again, we're really grateful for the opportunity to come together and talk about points of commonality, common challenges in the field. So one would be the importance of the tumor microenvironment in shaping both the clinical heterogeneity, clinical outcome, and just the different pathological variants that are seen in follicular lymphoma. The other takeaway would just be how heterogeneous these samples are, this tumor is, and the need for technologies that allow you to capture the heterogeneity at single cell and spatial resolution. And again, we review that in figure three, and it's exciting to see that there's these emerging technologies that can study what we like to call the evolving landscape of follicular lymphoma. And then also the importance of, if you're going to apply these technologies and tools, how you would do that. So careful consideration for how you would design the study. And that's captured in figure five, where again, we talk about sampling at those landmark time points, but acknowledging that the difficulty of capturing this tumor biology in a single biopsy. So the need for high resolution surveys of the tumor microenvironment, the technologies that we would recommend to employ, and then also how you would employ them to capture what's going on, both the cell intrinsic and extrinsic factors governing progression and therapeutic resistance. Another major takeaway is that, and this is also true in the primary article referenced in this review, is that you need to integrate these technologies. That's no single technology can really get after what's going on from the disease biology. So the integration of single cell RNA sequencing, bulk RNA sequencing, spatial biology, all of that is really critical. And the last part, I know it's a fourth takeaway, is this the changes in the anatomical structures and cell types and the tumor microenvironment. And also we talk so much about the heterogeneity of the tumor microenvironment, but across the review series, finding common ground. So one thing that was really exciting when Dr. Frieda Stevenson first reached out to author of the review is that they had seen our work and they had seen that we'd identified DC-SINE on follicular dendritic cells, and they also too are able to repeat that work. So even though the tumor is extremely heterogeneous, the fact that we can find common observations that would have meaningful impact in the field is very exciting. And the same is true for the presence of CD49A fibroblastic reticular cells first described by Karen Tartt's group. So that's really exciting.
My name is Leandro Sergetti, an associate professor of hematology and oncology at New York Presbyterian Hospital and Weill Cornell Medicine, Cornell University in New York. In this article, we discuss how the genetic factors in cancer cells, lymphoma cells, mutations, copy number alterations, will affect the cells that surround the lymphoma cell, the tumor microenvironment, how they affect the composition of the tumor microenvironment, or also the function of the cells in the tumor microenvironment. These cells can have a tumor supportive function and also can have a tumor inhibitory function. And this is at a certain level related to the genetic composition of the tumor. So that is the article about. I think that, you know, incorporating this feature, the functionality and composition of the tumor microenvironment, can improve the way that the patients are diagnosed and also how the treatment decisions are made. We have now clinical trials that are incorporating the features of the microenvironment, and we get a better understanding the effect of the new and old drugs on the cells that are not the cancer cells, but the microenvironment cells. So now we try to understand how much of the effect, of the therapeutic effect of these approaches, relies on targeting the tumor cell itself versus targeting the microenvironment. There's an increased evidence that targeting the microenvironment is as important as targeting the tumor cells in several cases. So that is a way that we can incorporate this into decision-making. And also, it helps us to understand better the diagnosis and the prognosis of certain patients, because although the genetics are important and the constitution of the lymphoma cell is still relevant, there are many things that are not captured by the lymphoma cell genetics, and it's in the microenvironment, that can help to understand if the patients are going to do better or worse with the standard of care, and eventually implement novel treatments for the patients that potentially get less, you know, efficacy for the standard of care. So for that reason, I think that it's important to incorporate the concept of the tumor microenvironment when designing the clinical trials. And it's something that we're going to see in the next coming years, I believe. The idea of a nice takeaway for this one is like we would like people to start thinking in the tumor microenvironment as an additional and important component of the lymphoma itself. And I would like to be, we provide evidence here how modifying the tumor microenvironment can make certain tumors respond to treatments and how can improve the precision of the treatment that we are incorporated. So we provide several examples on that regard. And also another nice takeaway from the article is how the microenvironment itself affects the tumor cells and things that are not, you know, genetically driven, for example, the age of the patient, ethnicity of the patient, and other factors that contribute to shape the microenvironment eventually will affect the lymphoma progression. So this is going from the microenvironment to the tumor cell. I think that information based on the age of the patient and the tumor microenvironment composition, older patients versus younger patients has different microenvironments, ethnicity, like, you know, African-American ethnicity, we have a different microenvironment, potentially more inflammatory than, you know, Caucasian white patients. That information should be incorporated into the decision-making, either at the clinical stage or at the clinical trial design. Those are, you know, important takeaways from the paper, I will say. My lab specifically and others are working on the microenvironment for, you know, a long time. I'm trying to understand this relationship. We started, you know, with frustrations, like, you know, we take the very aggressive tumor from the patients and try to grow them in vitro, you know, in dishes, and these cells will not survive. And it's like, what's going on? And we realized that they require the support of the normal cells. So that gives the idea that was not totally intrinsic, cell-intrinsic process going on in the patients. So it's like, you know, there was an importance on the microenvironment cells, on these, you know, normal cells that surround the tumor cells that were not fully realized. There was much more potential. And also on the other side, it's like, well, if we can, you know, somehow therapeutically target these cells in the patient, potentially we can also secondarily kill the lymphoma cells they are supporting. So, you know, it opens a totally new venue and opportunities for diagnosis and therapeutic target and understanding. Obviously, as I say at the beginning, there, you know, pro-tumor and anti-tumor effects on the microenvironment. So we need much better understanding of this functional relationship between the tumor cells and the microenvironment, and also between the microenvironment cells themselves, because they regulate each other. And that it was, you know, it was an explosion of this research over the past 5 years, I will say. We are going to that goal of understanding the microenvironment. And that was coupled with the development of new immunotherapy that are primarily targeting the microenvironment cells. So that conjunction, I think, that created the need for this review series that put together the current understanding of the microenvironment in lymphoma. Andrea, you want to talk something about this? You mentioned the heterogeneity and the importance of the, you know, a spatial understanding of what's going on in the microenvironment. So you want to expand a little on that? Or?
So one of the most emerging themes from this review series is, as we said, the importance of studying the tumor microenvironment in these B-cell lymphomas. And so in order to do that, really, you need to look at that in intact tissues using spatial technologies. And so, you know, understanding we spent a lot of time analyzing over 4,600 follicles and seeing there was distinct follicular growth patterns observed across, you know, the spectrum of disease from the non-progressors, progressors, and early relapsers. And that was captured not through dissociation, but looking at intact whole slide imaging and FFPE samples. Another really strong consideration is, especially for targeted approaches that use antibodies, that you need to validate these antibodies appropriately. And that, you know, one thing that could emerge out of this for the field is, you know, seeing that both Frida and the importance of DCCYM and follicular dendritic cells, along with the importance of the fibroblastic reticular cells, other molecules associated with the extracellular matrix and stroma, including SPARC, that there'd be an agreement in the field and validation of the tools, the antibodies, the technologies, again, how you apply them, so that we could extend this to a larger group of samples and really hone in biomarker discovery, which is a loaded word, but biomarker discovery, understanding how, you know, therapeutic resistance, as Dr. Cerretti mentioned, just studying therapeutic resistance, all of this is really important. So having agreed upon tools, including those antibodies that are validated for those target approaches, the need for whole slide spatial approaches to study the intact tumor microenvironment. That's really what I would want to convey, that spatial, we're going to see more and more spatial technologies applied to the tumor microenvironment at greater multiplexity, and then integrating that with other single cell technologies really, you know, will improve care, I believe, and hopefully get to the point where you can make informed, aid clinical decision-making, a more of a personalized medicine approach in the coming years for these tumors.
I hope we've provided for the community an overview of what we've been talking about, the microenvironment and the way lymphoma embeds itself in the microenvironment. The community will benefit from reading the details within these four reviews. I'd like to thank everybody who's contributed. I think we've got a fantastic collection of reviews. I really enjoyed reading all of them myself. And I hope the community does also. And there's no competition here. It's a theme of unity and progress.
Thank you for listening to this bonus episode of the Blood Podcast. To read these articles, visit bloodjournal.org. This episode is copyrighted by the American Society of Hematology.